This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
In 2 days' time, the current Victorian Ombudsman will be leaving the Ombudsman's office after 10 years in the role. And as a member of the FW2, which is the First Woman To Club, Deborah Glass has ruffled political feathers and championed investigations from aged care to prisons to pandemics. Deb Glass, a warm welcome to you to Joy Drive.
Thanks, Warren. Good afternoon to you.
It's great to have you in the studio. What do you think of the Pride Centre?
I love the Pride Centre, actually. I come past this place on the tram twice a day. I happen to live in St Kilda.
Ah.
And I watched it grow. I watched it take shape. I've been around here. I've talked on Joy before. And I've had the tour of the place. I think it's absolutely beautiful. It's something Melbourne should be really proud of.
Fantastic. Now, in your role, we've heard about the culture of fear in the government that's been happening, particularly when it comes to the public service. Were public servants willing to assist you in your investigations in the 10 years?
It was a really complicated story. And when I was tasked with investigating the politicisation of the public sector, one of the things I wanted to do was invite people to tell us, is there a problem or isn't there? I mean, you don't start with an assumption that there is necessarily a terrible problem. You want to find out what's going on. So if you've got stories, if you've got submissions, if you think that things are going well or badly, come to us. And one of the things that really shocked me when I started that investigation was the number of people who got in touch with we had a direct line, here's the number, call us, who said, look, I got to tell you about this, but I'm not willing to put my name to it, or I want to tell you something. And then we'd ring the person who they would tell us about, and they'd say, I can't possibly talk to you. My career would be finished.
So
and
they
you
were,
think, well, you know, that's not good.
So they were uncomfortable to tell you what was going on in the workings of government because they were feel of.
They would tell us, we had a range of scenarios. People would tell us stories about bad things that were happening, but would then say, but I can't go on the record. I'm not willing to be interviewed about this.
What were they afraid of?
Retribution, their jobs. People would say, I'll lose my job if anybody finds out I'm talking to you. So it was really troubling. I mean, we did in the end get enough people to talk to us to be able to come up with some pretty serious findings. But the fear factor in itself was quite scary.
What are the implications on us as Victorians, if there is this culture of fear and public servants unable to feel comfortable to talk to you about what's going on, what are the implications?
It goes deeper than whether you talk to the Ombudsman. It's about giving, this is the famous expression, frank and fearless advice to government. One of the hallmarks of our system of government is that you have a public service that's functionally independent of the government, of the ministry. And part of its job is to give frank and fearless advice to ministers. And ultimately, they will implement the policies that the government sets, but there will be this role where the government, at least when they make their decision, is making it having been given advice about, for example, what something is going to cost.
Mm-hmm. And what the consequences are. So were they giving decisions based on the political considerations of a decision rather than necessarily what was right for Victoria?
Well, what we found, and some of the examples we've seen validated quite recently, the Commonwealth Games, the suburban rail loop.
$100 billion.
And the rest. we still don't have an amount of what that is ultimately going to cost. The normal course of events where the senior public servant would be tasked with exploring a policy, providing advice on it, and then ultimately the decision is made, that wasn't happening. The advice was coming from handpicked consultants, who were asked to prove up the concept. We found that in the case of the suburban rail loop. The centralisation of power in the Premier's office advice was coming, and we describe this as a kind, or people describe this to us, in fact, as an echo chamber. So that, you know, the government was getting the advice from its trusted sources, as opposed to independent sources that would perhaps say things that the government did not want to hear.
Did the government put public servants in senior positions that were, you know, that would make decisions that were favourable to what the government wanted to do?
Well, in some cases, in the case of the Bourbon Rail Loop, for example, the most senior public servant responsible for transport was completely sidelined by this, was simply not in the loop at all, and only found out about it just before the announcement was made.
So the Suburban Rail Loop is a Labor policy. We know it's going to happen, but it doesn't stack up, does it? Is there a business case for it?
Well, the business case has been heavily criticised by all kind, you know, the Auditor General and the Parliamentary Budget Office and others who have scrutinised this and said, well, that those costings don't add up.
So do you think with the change of Premier, do you think things are starting to improve?
I really don't know. I mean, I would hope that we're going to see some change. But for me, some of the test will be what happens to some of the big recommendations I made in that report, because it will involve a cultural change that starts at the top, of being prepared to be held to account, to being willing to receive frank and fearless advice, and not simply axing the most senior public servant because they tell you something you don't want to hear, which is what happened when Daniel Andrews became Premier.
Just on receiving advice, now I've heard you've got a mantra, complaints are free feedback, learn to love them.
Oh, yes.
Has there ever been a time that this mantra has kept you awake at night?
There are always difficult complaints and complainants, and every complaints body is familiar with them. But I think it's too easy to let the bad colour your impressions of the good. And for me, the overwhelming, I mean, I've met some difficult complainants in the last 10 years and more, but the overwhelming experience has been positive. You know, where most people have a grievance, and even if they don't express it particularly well, and sometimes they can be pretty noisy and uncomfortable when they put it forward. But most people's grievances are legitimate, and they tell you something really important about their relationship with government. And you should listen to them.
What investigation and report are you the most proud of in 10 years?
Oh, it's in 10 years, I have tabled 99 reports in Parliament.
99 reports, my goodness.
I only added those up, you know, in the last couple of weeks. I thought, damn, why didn't I get that 100th report?
Can you squeeze one in? You've got 2 days.
Tricky. So it would be, I think, difficult to, I mean, I'm proud of all the reports I've tabled, but some of the ones that have stayed with me the most are the ones that actually haven't made the headlines, you know, the ones that really made a compelling impact on people's lives.
We're chatting with Victorian Ombudsman Deborah Glass about her 10 years tenure as a Victorian Ombudsman. Now, Deb, you were appointed by a Victorian Liberal government, Dennis Napthine's, in fact, in March 2014, and you'll end your appointment under Jacinta Allen, having only one other Premier, which is, of course, Dan Andrews. Did that stability of government affect the Ombudsman's funding in a positive way?
Funding is always a challenge for integrity officers because, and I say this rather cynically, governments tend to fund their integrity officers by as little as they can get away with because they can be very enthusiastic about accountability when they're in opposition and then suddenly they're in government and it's, you know, not quite such a palatable proposition. So, and that's where, for me, the media has played an incredibly important role. So I've always eventually got the funding I've needed to do the basics of the job, but sometimes I've had to make a lot of noise before I got it.
Just on that, when you arrived in the role, there was no such media or communications people to assist you with the Ombudsman's messaging. What was your take on that?
Well, that was quite funny, actually, because I'd come from a really high-profile role in the UK where I was dealing with police complaints and corruption investigations into deaths following police contact. And like it or not, and it was tough, you know, dealing with the media was a core and almost daily part of the job. So I came into the role of Ombudsman, and I remember saying, you know, can I have a quick chat to the comms person, and I was told, well, the Ombudsman doesn't communicate except through reports tabled in Parliament.
Oh.
And I thought, okay, well, that's one way of doing the job, but I think mine will be a little different.
And I suppose if you're just doing it through reports tabled in Parliament, how do you get to the people?
Well, you don't really, and it means that everything you do is filtered through the way the media chooses to interpret your reports tabled in Parliament. You don't get to talk directly.
What's your feel about the state of the media landscape at the moment in terms of, I suppose, its independent broadcasting and assessment of news?
I think it's pretty good. I mean, I've the media has certainly been my friend in the role, and they've supported the independence of my office. And that's been true really right across the media landscape. So I'm grateful for that. I really am. And the media has helped me communicate a message. I mean, I've done talkback regularly. Just yesterday I was back in Ballarat, you know, talking to ABC statewide listeners, and I've been doing that for years in the role, and you know, taking calls from people in Country Victoria, and you really get to know what people care about in Country Victoria. And quite a few grumpy farmers, lots of complaints about local councils and roads, but you need to hear these things, and it's an opportunity for me to hear directly from people, and it's an opportunity for people around Victoria to get a feeling for what the Ombudsman does.
Do you think the government was listening to those conversations and thinking, oh my goodness, we better be careful?
I suspect local councils do a lot of listening in these conversations, but I really don't know, and I don't care.
Okay, we're going to because you've got 2 days left, we've got some of the little quick fire questions that we're going to fire at you. So,
okay.
Time to relax now. Do you have an inspirational leader who you most admire?
Oh, you got these are tough questions.
I need
to
the
ask
ticking
me.
Clock in the background. To put
you
the
are
going to
need a ticking
you.
Clock. Do you know? I mean, you know, when I think about inspirational people, I actually think about my mother.
Oh,
so
great!
I'm. She died many years ago, in fact, but she was an inspiration for me. She was a role model for just equality, and you know, she was a formidable woman who was way ahead of her time in her generation. So yeah, I think about my father, you know, also gone, because they weren't stereotypical when it came to gender, and that was unusual for the time and unusual for the generation.
What's next for you, gardening or another job?
I do think when you take on a role like Ombudsman, you've got to be prepared for it to be your last big job, because if you do it well, and I hope I have, you're not likely to get invited to do too many more, at least not by government.
I'm sure the phones will be ringing in a couple of days' time.
So it's I'm not completely ready to hang up my boots, but I think it will involve a lot more time in the vegetable garden, and it has been a bit neglected of late, so that's probably not a bad thing.
Okay, UK or Australia, you live in both countries. Which one do you feel most at home at?
Oh, I'm really glad to be back in Australia. I was away for nearly 30 years, and it wasn't just the UK. I lived in Hong Kong, I lived in Switzerland. So I spent a lot of time outside Australia, in different cultures, different environments. And there was much in the UK that I did love, but I'm really happy to be back, and I feel at home here. I feel connected.
Okay, last question. What's your preference to relax? Run a mile or read a book? Or I'm going to add an extra one, get in the vegetable garden.
Do you know all three? I mean, I do
You're
run.
You're a runner?
I do run, I do read, and I do want to spend time in the garden. So if it's okay to be really greedy and take all three, then I'll take them.
Deb, great to chat with you. And thank you sincerely for taking the time to come in and chat with us on Joy Drive.
It's been a pleasure.
That
Thanks,
is the Victorian Ombudsman, Deborah Glass. You're on Drive.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.